Today on Maine Calling, retirement today, not what it used to be. When you think about your retirement years, what comes to mind? Hours spent fishing or doting on your grandchildren or playing pickleball? Or do you plan to reinvent yourself and even start a second career? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, how changes in society have altered the way people approach retirement. Some people simply turn 65, walk away from the workplace, and never look back, but many others take a different path. With longer lifespans and a wider range of ways to work, retirement can take on different forms. What are the variety of ways to retire, and what does it mean to retire well? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. Retirement used to be viewed as an end period, but that has changed. Today, it can be a financial move, a winding down, a refresh, a transition. We'll discuss retirement trends and mindsets, as well as how to prepare for whatever kind of retirement you envision. This show is part of our series, Life Passages. Joining me today, Noelle Bonham, who is State Director of AARP Maine, and Dr. Derek Tharp, Associate Professor of Finance with the University of Maine Center on Aging. He specializes in retirement and family economic well-being. Join the conversation. Do you have a retirement goal? Are you retired already? If so, do you have advice for those of us who are not retired? Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Noelle, I'll start with you. Views on retirement are changing, and I'm guessing that one of the biggest factors is that people are simply living longer. With every generation, the life expectancy jumps, and today it's almost 80 years old. Does that translate to people wanting to stay in the workforce longer?
Yes, it does. I mean, you said it. The bottom line is we are living longer and generally working much longer than our, you know, the generations before us. And that has to do with, you know, a whole range of factors, you know, especially the working longer piece. It's economics. You know, people are feeling more insecure than they did before as they approach retirement. They feel like they haven't saved as much as they would like to, or as much as they need to as they get to retire. So they're having to work longer. And also, it could be for many people, it could just be wanting to stay engaged and wanting to, you know, do something meaningful. You know, they may have thought that once I retire, I'm going to just put my, you know, feet up and kind of read my favorite novel and kind of, you know, disappear. And then they realize, well, actually, I want to do more. I want to continue doing something meaningful. So that could be a reason as well. And then there's this whole concept of unretirement, where people retire and, you know, do that for a couple of years and they feel like they want to go back to work.
The unretirement. Yeah, I was going to turn to you, Derek, and say what Noelle describes. And sure, some people do want to step away and put their feet up. But for most people, it's not really an on-off switch anymore, right?
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I do agree that we're seeing this where people, even people state their intentions to retire at a certain age. Oftentimes, other life things can happen. It can be health. It could be other factors that might change those initial plans. But then definitely on that, you know, even once somebody makes that leap, once they have retired, I was running some numbers recently looking at the Health and Retirement Study, which is it's a nice nationally representative survey. And there, about 1 in 10 people who fully retired in their 60s was actually back to work within 4 years. So it's not even a you do it, it's on off, binary type of thing. It is something where people kind of experiment. And I think we're also seeing a lot of experimenting on the transition into retirement. And what does that look like? Is it a more gradual kind of pared back type of work? Is it a shift to maybe working in a nonprofit or a field that feels more meaningful to somebody than maybe their primary or initial career was? And so all sorts of ways that we're seeing that really change and evolve.
Derek, I'm wondering, and Noel actually alluded to this, costs today are, it's no secret that inflation is real and it's taking a hit. How many people are out there who had either planned to retire by now or plan to retire soon who are looking at the cost of groceries, the cost of gas, the cost of travel and thinking, well, you know, we're going to add a couple of years to that plan?
Yeah, I think it's a real concern for many people, and particularly those who might be on more of a fixed income pension type situation. There's definitely concern about, okay, do we have enough additional savings to make that work? How do we make sure it's going to be there? Social Security is a great source of income for many Americans. And fortunately, that does have the inflation protection built into it. So you do get an inflation adjustment there, but definitely a real concern for many. And, it's an interesting topic for me because it is very important. You want to make sure you are prepared, going into retirement. I also do think there are many ways where perhaps a lot of the tools and the methodologies for helping people calculate, okay, am I ready for retirement, actually are a little bit too pessimistic. They paint too negative of a picture and actually push some people to working longer than they have to, maybe going into retirement, not spending as much as they have to. And particularly then when you think about how that relates to things like health span and the fact that, we kind of have this, there's our lifespan, but there's our health span, and how long are we healthy and able to actually enjoy what we're doing or different types of activities. There can certainly be reasons why I think some people might be putting off that retirement phase a little too long and could actually enjoy more of that sooner.
This is really interesting, Derek. It's the first time I've heard somebody say this, that some of the conventional wisdom out there might be a little too pessimistic. People might be being told they need to save more than they really need to. They need to put off retiring. Can you dig into that a little bit? What are we finding?
Yeah. And I could go way deep in the weeds there, but I'll try to keep it, high level, that what we're really seeing is that a lot of that research is based off of assumptions that are kind of worst case scenarios. So imagine that somebody lives as long as might be kind of a realistic lifespan. And let's say that they go through the worst markets we've seen in history. And it's just stacking all these different things that are really sort of negative. When I think in reality, what we see is people do have to adjust. There might be time periods where, go back to the late 70s, early 80s, high inflation, that had impacts that were real on people. But people made adjustments. They, made adjustments in spending here and there. Maybe they shifted around what their housing situation looked like. There was ways that people could make adjustments. And that's the other thing a lot of the research doesn't look at. It really paints a picture of just kind of, we assume people are going to charge forward doing exactly what they did kind of when we assume they entered retirement. And once we account for the fact that people can make adjustments, they can cut back here or there, they can shift their priorities. And actually, in reality, what we've seen historically when you look at the data is that actually a lot of retirements of periods have turned out much better than planned. And so if those adjustments were being made, really, they should have been looking to like, okay, I can spend more, I can travel, I can give to organizations that I care about. There's different things they could be doing there. So that's the other side of that same coin.
Noel, I'm wondering if this has something to do with the generations that have either recently retired or about ready to retire, that it is built into our culture to think about the worst case scenario and plan for it.
I think there's a lot of truth to that in terms of, how we're conditioned to think about retirement, and also how financial planners kind of really help you think about planning for your future. And that has to do around the worst case scenario, right? In some cases, you're only one major life incident away from, or a major accident or a fall away from completely turning your finances upside down. And I think taking that into mind, I think, if you're working with someone, I think they might help you plan for that eventuality if that's the case. But I mean, if you're looking at the fact that we're actually folks who are 65 and older are the fastest growing demographic in the nation. And within those who are 65 and older, the 85 plus subgroup is growing fastest. So people are actually living longer. So they what they could have thought about, I mean, initially, if they were thinking about, you know, saving for the next 20 years, maybe now they have to think longer about how much they need to save for, you know, for much longer than they intended after they retired. And some of the things that Derek said may not always make sense for someone who's living on a fixed income. They may not be able to adjust, right, to that changing financial situation because they're living on the bare minimum. And for a lot of older adults that live on fixed incomes, it could be a challenge to be able to adapt when something happens and they're not able to, you know, change very quickly. So there's a financial strain, and then they're having to work longer. And there's plenty of research out there that shows for those people who choose to go back to work or are having to go back to work, they're working on average 4 to 8 years longer than they intended.
You know, I remember, Derek, the first time I met with somebody who might be considered a financial advisor. I think it was someone connected with my job. And he said, you know, how old, you know, when do you want to retire? How old are you going to be? And I thought to myself, I have never thought about that before. How many people are like I was in my 40s that I really I'm supposed to think about that now?
Well, I think it's incredibly common. And it really, to me, when you're having those conversations, it's once somebody's maybe within 5 to 10 years of when they're really truly planning a retirement, it starts to get more real and concrete. But that's one of the real challenges of people who are trying to plan ahead from further back is really just who knows what life is going to look like. You know, even if I try to predict what I'm going to be doing 5, 10 years from now, like I don't really have a good clue there. And so it is something that I think really does throw a lot of people off in that planning process. But they're, you know, just, I think the practical takeaway is kind of relying on some of those good rules of thumb. You know, is somebody putting away a healthy amount for retirement? Do they have the right types of insurance in place? Are they building kind of a foundation that gives them that flexibility to eventually exercise kind of those decisions when they get to retirement?
And Noel, I was guessing that there are a lot of reasons people might be retiring earlier, or at least retiring for the first time earlier than they expected. You know, I can think of a parent who needs help, or a child who needs help, or suddenly there were mass layoffs at their place of employment. And I'm wondering just how you advise people to think about, you know, when that financial advisor asks you or that person at the bank asks you, how old do you plan to be when you retire? How do you think about, well, I plan to be 67, but boy, life might throw me a curveball at 58.
That is very true. And I was going to add to what Derek said, is that it's also a question of when you start planning, right? The longer you plan for retirement, the better you are prepared for retirement. And kind of, you know, and we found that a lot of people don't really start thinking about savings the same way as some other people do, who are better planned for retirement, until it's too close to their retirement age. And then they're suddenly realizing that, oh, I'm only 10 years, 12 years away, and have very little savings left. So, you know, your financial advisor, when you who spoke to you when you were in your 40s, was probably the right time to start, or maybe sooner. And that way you're actually preparing for it, and you have more time to prepare for retirement. And then you have more choices as well. And if you're thinking, you know, like your question in terms of, if you're thinking you're going to retire around 65, and, you know, things change at 58, are you able to go back to work because you're now an older worker and employers may not see you the same way, you know, as they did when you were in your 40s or 30s or when you were younger. And so there's that challenge as well.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up too, Noel, because we've had discussions before about ageism and how there are stereotypes that are mostly completely untrue about older working Americans. On the other hand, we're having this conversation in a state and in a country with so many workforce shortages, from everything from doctors to school bus drivers to, teachers. I mean, pretty much every profession in Maine, there is a shortage. And I'm wondering if what you're seeing on the ground, are you seeing employers more willing to look at somebody who is recently retired but is willing to work 10 or 20 hours a week than maybe even 5 or 10 years ago?
Yes, and I wish they would do more. There are more and more employers looking at older workers as a valuable resource, as a valuable human resource. They're thinking about not only hiring them, but they're also thinking about meaningful ways of engaging them, keeping them. Retention is as important as recruitment. But that's not enough. Not every employer sees an older adult as a valuable, experienced human resource that could actually add to the value and the bottom line of the company or the organization that they work for. And that you can see that in how employers are still fairly inflexible in terms of how they structure a job or a job description. You know, for an older adult, they may not want to work every day of the week. You know, if they're just going back for 20 hours, if they're just going back for 10, 15 hours, not every employer is willing to accommodate that. And I think there's room there, particularly in our state, the oldest state in the nation. It would serve us really well and help us address our workforce deficit by thinking creatively and outside the box. Can we just have, older adults work 2 hours a day or just one day a week, whatever that might look like, offer more flexibility? I think since COVID, employers have become a lot more open to this idea of remote work, virtual work, which I think would most employers would have been really very anti-working from home before COVID, but I think a lot more employers are open to that now. So I'm hoping that would continue to trend in the right direction.
Derek, I have to ask you about the psychological aspect of retiring. What are some of the big hurdles? Maybe hurdles people expect, but then some hurdles that come as a surprise to many people.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of transitions bundled into what we talk about around retirement. And, for some people, it's even just this shift from being a saver to a spender, to somebody who has, they built up a nest egg and now they need to spend down that nest egg. And there are real kind of frictions sometimes in navigating that. And definitely some people who, I'd say particularly people who are really, really diligent about their savings and things like that might tend to struggle a little bit more with that. Now, some people, that's not as big of a hurdle. There's also research on like different types of income sources in retirement and the way that we psychologically might struggle with those more than others. And so when you get something like a pension, Social Security, like a recurring kind of income stream, that isn't something that somebody has to kind of spend down in that sense, that is something that we do see people are a little more comfortable and freely spending. So there's one transition there. I think another one is just around kind of work and identity and what people think of. David Brooks has he talks about the difference, the transition from kind of eulogy or from resume virtues to eulogy virtues, and the way that we often in our working years are very focused on kind of what are those things we can do to build our resume, build our identity around that and our profile. Whereas once we transition into retirement, and there's other research that looks at, okay, as time spans even contract, so if somebody's thinking, okay, well, now I'm going to live a smaller window than it was before, we shift what our priorities and our values are, and it gets into more of that sort of meaningful type of things. And, what would somebody say about us at our funeral? And that becomes kind of, more of a shift. And I think kind of the funny thing is a lot of us, even in our working years, would look at it and say, actually, those eulogy type virtues are what we care about more. Maybe our actions day to day and our work and everything doesn't necessarily reflect that, but it's definitely one of those things that's a shifting identity for people in retirement as well.
Well, we are talking about the changing meaning of the word retirement. It's not lost on me, Noel, that the word retirement is right, or retired is right in your name at AARP. And I want to talk about that a little bit when we come back. We also have so many calls coming in. If you would like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What does it mean to retire well? Well, the definitions and expectations around retirement have evolved. With me today to talk about what retirement may look like, Derek Tharp, who is Associate Professor of Finance with the UMaine Center on Aging, and Noelle Bonham, State Director for AARP Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Did you retire and then unretire? If so, why? Are you thinking about perhaps retiring in the next few years? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Now, well, we don't have time for a whole history lesson, but I do think that the history of AARP itself reflects the changing nature of what retirement means in our world. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that when AARP was founded, retirement was really a scary and bleak proposition for many people, and that's why it was founded.
That is absolutely true. The founder, Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, found a teacher in a very bad situation, a retired teacher, and felt like that shouldn't what retirement should look like. And anyone who's retiring should be better prepared and should have the supports to be able to, you know, age in place and thrive as they age. So that's like the quick high level version. And retirement is also such an important transition. And often we think about retirement as someone who's had a job for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years and is transitioning to this phase of not working the same way. But that could also be a homemaker, right? When they get to a point where they're like, you know, I've raised my kids, they've moved out, you know, I don't have the same kind of responsibilities. My life is transitioning to doing a lot less or doing something different or doing the things that I'm doing as a vocation, not necessarily as a job, as a profession, or, you know, that kind of transition I think is so important to identify and to be able to be prepared for, whether you've been working all your life or whether you've been a homemaker and working as a homemaker, because that's also an important role. And often we don't pay attention to what that looks like for a homemaker. But the bottom line is it's about that transition for when you don't have to do the same things you've done all your life, because there's you're older, your priorities change. Going back to what Derek said, like you start thinking about what would it mean to live this next phase of my life? You know, how can I make it meaningful with the things that give me joy, with the things that, you know, add value to my daily life?
And it's interesting to me that AARP was founded in 1958, and when it was the case that this school teacher was living, if I remember right, in a tar paper shack. And you know, I think a lot of people look back at the 1950s with rose-colored glasses as this great period in American history, but it was really quite recent that retirement was very, very ugly for many people.
True, and I think AARP is working, and that there are many other organizations as well that are working similarly to really change the face of retirement, for people to actually look forward to retirement and not think of it as a very bleak, miserable phase. You know, and as we're living longer, you know, it's also a great thing for us to be prepared and for us to, you know, address what kind of ageism we might hold ourselves, but also address the ageism that exists in our society, and there's a lot of that, to be able to address that and show the world that aging can be graceful, aging can really help one thrive. There's so much value in, you know, bringing your life's lessons into that phase of your life and sharing that with others.
An email here from Bruce. Derek, you knew this one was coming. There's always a debate about whether one should take Social Security as soon as they can or wait for the marginally larger monthly payout. My wife retires in about 13 months. She has done a great job saving her whole career. We think she should get well. The getting is good now that everything in Washington, D.C. is standing on its ear compared to just a few years ago. Realistically, the way Congress has flushed the Social Security Trust Fund over the last 60 years, who's to say it won't go bankrupt? I think any money you have invested with even a modest return, like 8%, will be worth more than waiting to take Social Security payments, which may only increase with COLA by 3%. Is that right?
there's a lot in that question. I could definitely dive into there, but I would say a few things that, you know, and I've done quite a bit of research on the Social Security claiming decision and factors that go into that. I would say there are circumstances when it can make sense to claim at 62. There's times it makes sense to wait till 67. There's times it makes sense to delay all the way to 70. I'm not a big fan of the kind of one size fits all type prescriptions there. So I can't really answer in this particular case, would that make sense or not? But, on the one, talking about Washington, the trustees report recently came out showing that, yes, we do anticipate the trust fund is depleting. One thing I do want to emphasize there, because it is something that causes a lot of stress for people, I think, thinking about claiming Social Security, and that's that, you know, this was really intended to work that way. The trust fund, we knew because of demographics and because of the baby boomer generation, like we needed to put away more to accumulate in this trust fund. And then that trust fund was going to get spent down. That was all an anticipated dynamic. So this idea that, oh, it's running out, and so that's a problem, isn't necessarily right. It was designed as a pay-as-you-go system. Now, there is the reality of, we didn't get the math on that exactly right. Demographics worked out to be a little bit different. There's all sorts of complexities there. And so it's depleting a little bit sooner than anticipated. That does mean that, right now, if Congress does nothing, we might be looking at something like a 20% sort of across the board cut. But I also don't think that's a very likely outcome. I do think there's a very good chance that we will see that, reforms will be made. I do think for people who are younger, Social Security might look different down the road than it does today. Historically speaking, when we've looked at proposals, people who are 55 and above have been grandfathered in under older rules. I really do think that we're more likely to see, changes in how people pay into Social Security and things like that. That really the dials you need to change aren't that huge to shore things up and get them back to where people can receive 100% of benefits. So I do think it's fine for people to plan for, hey, maybe there will be some sort of cuts. Like that can be a good exercise to stress test and talk through. But some of this like more catastrophic end of like, have to claim it now just because of that, I wouldn't necessarily lean on that. There, I would look at more personal circumstances. For some people who are say, I've saved enough, I can make it. We've run all the numbers. Even if I claim at 62, my retirement plan looks very good. And particularly those people that might be more willing to spend their Social Security check than they are to spend down a portfolio. I think that can be a case where if you sat down, you've run the numbers and things look good, then that shouldn't be something somebody takes off the table as well. So always a very individualized and personal decision.
We'll go to Priscilla calling from Winthrop. Hi, Priscilla, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to mention a public policy that I would support, which is to increase public transportation, because many of us elders, especially in rural states, would love to do some work, but we lose our ability to transport ourselves and public transportation is not there. Or it's expensive because we're talking about basically low-paying jobs. I was born in 43, so I predate Social Security, and I just feel that we need to look at other programs that will bolster the benefits we already have and increase our ability to pay for our futures. I'm 82. Who knew I was going to live to 82? But I long since used up my savings. So that's all.
Yeah, Priscilla, thank you so much for calling in. So Noelle, Priscilla is 82, would love to work a few hours a week, but can't get to a job. I'm guessing you hear this over and over and over again.
And over and over and over again, everywhere I go. Like when we do our community conversations across the state, the very first thing that comes up from, you know, as a barrier is transportation. And for, you know, and that's not true only for older adults. That's true for a lot of younger folks that live in remote parts of the state or in rural parts of the state that are wanting to get a decent job, but cannot travel to the job because they do not have a car, and cars can be expensive, and the economics don't allow them to own a car, so they have to depend on public transportation. But if there's no public transportation, then that prevents them from having a job and living a, you know, decent, financially secure life. So that is a real problem. And fortunately in our state, and this absolutely is not the only solution, but I'm just highlighting that there are so many volunteer driver programs that are emerging across the state, and they're really meeting a significant need. And I hope that that at some day soon we will actually see some sort of a public transportation system that will support these volunteer driver programs, but also build a better network, even if it doesn't mean like going to every nook and corner of the state. But at least connecting to those volunteer programs would make a huge difference.
Thank you, Priscilla, so much for calling in. Let's see, an email here from, just lost my screen, there we go, an email from Esther. When beginning activities or considering volunteer options for your retirement, my advice is start slow, then ease off. Ha ha. But seriously, don't make too big a commitment, especially at first. Try different things. What do you think of her advice, Noelle?
I think that is very sound advice. ARP is, you know, you can safely say that ARP is a volunteer-driven organization. We depend on our volunteers to be the spokespersons, to do the important work that ARP does. It's very centered around volunteer engagement. And her advice is so sound, so true. Like sometimes people, when they retire, you know, to fill in the time, start making too many commitments, and within a year or two, completely burn out. And the advice to start slow is very important, to really feel out what it is that would give you a lot of joy. Does that volunteer opportunity also give you the opportunity to address social isolation? Or is it something that you've always wanted to do, that this volunteer opportunity actually helps you learn, gain new skills like you never did before, you know, particularly in an area that you didn't work in for a profession, any of those things. So I would agree with that person completely.
Calling in now, Cindy Williams, a longtime anchor and reporter at News Center Maine. Cindy, thanks so much for taking the time to call in.
Of course, anything for you.
Now, you retired, and I'm using air quotes here, from News Center 5 years ago. I have to ask you, Cindy, was it hard to give up a career that you loved and you worked so hard to achieve?
Yes and no. It was a little bittersweet, but it was time. I think all of us kind of have that moment of clarity when we think, you know what? I think it's time to do something different. And I had that. Lee had retired the year before, my husband. And he was making retirement look really fun.
So there was some incentive there. Well, the reason I asked you to call, Cindy, is I know what retirement looks like for you. And I was wondering, well, to me, your retirement looks pretty darn fun. What is it that you are doing in your retirement?
Well, we had always wanted to live in a different country. We wanted to live abroad, learn a new culture, a new language. We loved to travel. We wanted to set ourselves up in such a way that we could do that freely. So that was really kind of the overall plan when we retired. But then this kind of second half a career kind of presented itself, fell in our lap. So we are still working a little bit. And I always use air quotes when I say the word retired, because I don't really feel completely retired.
Mm-hmm. And so what you are, and what is the name of you? You're modeling. You are.
Yeah, I'm modeling.
And you are in a certain niche market. Tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Explain to me Who is calling you? Who's hiring you?
Well, Lee is the one who fell into all of this first during COVID. L.L. Bean called him to do the catalog, and then it kind of took off for him from there. And then because it was COVID, they started asking him if he had a wife he would not have to mask with on set. And he happened to have one. So that's kind of how I got into it. So who calls us? Well, we have five different agencies all over the place, both the United States and Mexico and Latin America. And they call us. We also apply to jobs. There are various avenues where we're made aware of various postings that come up. And so it's pretty constant in that we're constantly auditioning in some way or applying in some way. And the work is intermittent, but usually requires travel, which we don't mind at all. We find very, very fun. It was kind of the point of the whole thing. And this was not at all what we expected to be doing, but we just find it fun. And we're learning yet another new industry, new skill, meeting really creative people, which is probably the most exciting part about what we do. These people are just incredible.
Well, and what's so interesting, so many things are interesting to me, but one is that in this situation, your age is an advantage, right? Because often you're posing as the retired couple on a cruise or the grandparents
exactly.
taking their children somewhere special. And that would not work if you were younger.
Exactly. I mean, if you had told me I would be doing this 10 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. It never occurred to me, really, that modeling included people our age. And of course it does, because we're the ones with the expendable income and the time to spend it how we want. So of course, that's going to be a big part of what we do. But Lee and I do a lot of resorts, cruises, insurance, banking, you name it. But
well, I want to ask you.
Definitely a niche for that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't hurt that you're just beautiful and lovely and fun to work with and all that, too. But I want to know what advice you have for others who might be trying to decide whether to give up a career that they love, that feeling that tug, but also being a little bit afraid. There are so many careers that people have worked so hard for and have put so much into and have finally reached that place where they feel
sure.
as though they're really good at it.
Yeah. You know, I would say that you kind of have a gut feeling when you know. A lot of people I know, older than myself, are still working at the jobs that they love because they love the work. It's what makes them get up in the morning, and they look forward to it. They look forward to being in the office with the people that they work with. And it's not that I didn't enjoy that anymore. It was just time for a change. There was something tugging at me that said, you know, it's time to try something new. So I really think it's an individual decision. But I also think that if there is something in the back of your mind that you have been running over, something else you'd like to do, some grand plan that you feel would really make you happy, don't wait so long to leave your job that you're not able to do it. I think Lee was the leader in this whole venture of retiring a little earlier. We both left at 58 because his father died when he was only 52. And he never got to get to retirement. He never got to the place where he could just relax and enjoy himself and do the things he really wanted to do. So Lee was determined not to let that happen to us or let mm-hmm. that happen to him. And I followed along. I'm glad I did. It worked out really, really well.
Well, Cindy Williams, you've always been a personal inspiration to me, and I'm so happy that you took time to call in today. Cindy Williams, longtime anchor at News Center Maine. Before we go to a break, though, Noel, I want to ask you, I saw you nodding when Cindy said, if there's always been that thing you want to do, don't wait. And I'm taking your nodding because you agree.
I do agree, and I think it's so important. And also, I think what Cindy did, it's worked out so well for her. And one doesn't always have to also leave their jobs to be able to do the thing that they've always been wanting to. I think part of the aging process is also about, you know, increasing your, having more experiences in your life that are meaningful and that you could add to your to your drawer of like experiences, if I may say so, to that box of, you know, beautiful things that you've been collecting over the years. And there's so much truth to being able to take some time and do that one thing you always wanted to do and not having to wait, because life could change. And, you know, you could, I've heard so many folks say, including relatives say that, you know, I only wish I had done this 10 years ago when I could do it with much more ease, you know, or when they said that when I could have done it with X, Y, and Z who are not there anymore. So I think, you know, capturing the day is also good, and one doesn't necessarily always have to retire to do it, but doing it when it's when the time feels right and when you're able to do it financially and, you know, all the other aspects, but not waiting, I think, is in sometimes a good thing.
Well, we are going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The retirement landscape has been changing along with society and the economy. We're exploring different versions of retirement and what they mean for financial or emotional well-being. My guests, Noelle Bonham with AARP Maine and Derek Tharp with the UMaine Center on Aging. Share your comments and questions. If you're quick, you could get in a call, 1-800-399-3566, or an email, talk@maine.public.org. An email here from Jonathan. Having worked many decades and then being able to sell a third generation business, I sold a business. I didn't retire. I've learned to discard the word retire to replace it with rewire. Retire should be eliminated. Most individuals have so much to offer post-employment. One has a new cadence or rhythm to life. You do lose or create a new identity. It can take 1 to 3 years for this to happen, different for each of us. So, Jonathan, thank you for that. We'll go to Jill, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Jill. Go ahead.
Hello. Let me just turn speaker off. Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm listening to this, and it's all very great. But I've been on disability since I was 55. I'm 72. So to my house to get medical help in different countries. And I have never, ever in my entire life with four children and three houses made ever over $20,000 a year. And now that I've been on disability since I was 55, I live on $12,000 a year. And there's a lot of us. There's huge amounts of us because I'm from here. And so assisted living, subsidized housing, oh, there's so many local elderly people. I went to school 3 times, and I honestly, like, owned 3 houses and started a lot of businesses. But I never could afford, like, I would work one job for minimum wage, and then I would work 2 more jobs under the table. So,
you know, Jill,
now I'm 72, I'm just curious, because of retirement, maybe it's a whole different program, Jennifer.
I'm so glad you called, and I think in the beginning of the program, Noelle, you were talking about this, is that, boy, we're talking about such a variety of experiences, especially here in Maine, and that a lot of people don't have the luxury to even think about this whole concept of retirement because of what life has thrown at them.
I agree. And there's many older adults that would be able to say something similar to what our caller has just stated. It's because, you know, it's not that they intended to age like that, but, you know, disability happens, it happens, and then it becomes part of your life. And then you have to, you know, find ways to embrace that and thrive through it. And sometimes it's just not possible, no matter how hard you try. And I think that is a reality for a lot of older adults that live on fixed income. And also, I have to say, not just older adults, but many folks who have to live on fixed incomes because of a whole host of reasons of what life presents to them and how they end up where they are.
Derek, is there anything you'd like to add to Noel's thoughts?
No, I mean, I agree with everything he said there. And it just, I think thinking about if more from a public policy perspective and what safety nets are there and what resources we're providing, are obviously very important questions there. And by no means do we have any perfect systems, and definitely ways those could be improved.
Jill, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go to Old Orchard Beach and Nikki. Hi, Nikki. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Great program today. I have a piece of advice for folks that are contemplating retirement, and that is to make sure that you're moving towards something, not just away from something. I spent the better part of my career in corporate America, and I'm grateful to corporate America for what it allowed me to do financially. I don't miss it particularly. But about 2 years before I retired, I enrolled in a small chaplaincy institute here in Maine that's called CHIME. And I have been working since 2020 as a chaplain and as a part-time minister. And the previous caller said something about rewiring. We've always called it refiring. It's like you're refiring your career. You're refiring your life. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, Nikki, congratulations to you. Derek.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly with that. That's one of my favorite questions for people is, what are they retiring to, not what are they retiring from? And really thinking through that transition and having some plan in place. I think some of the least pleasant retirements I've seen are when somebody does really, they really don't like their job. There's something about it. They're really just focused on getting away from something, and then they get to retirement and they really don't know what to do, and they might see health decline, they might see the social network that they had starting to fall apart. Like, they might just see all these things that can come quickly. So I definitely agree with that.
Very quickly, and also there's such a positive spin to retiring and to aging in that, within that context of retirement, with these terms like rewiring and refiring. And building on what Derek just said, I think it's how you're approaching aging and retirement, which, of course, in many cases, retirement comes at a certain age. People could retire very early too, but generally speaking. And I think that positive spin is also so important to because it helps you, again, I'm using a word that was used earlier, rewire how you think about, that process and that phase of your life.
Nikki, thank you for calling in. Let's see, we'll go to Joanne calling from Naples. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Terrific program. I have been looking for quite a while for suggestions for online job search for those of us over 65. I'm looking for remote positions in my background, which is, as you know, healthcare, acute care nursing. I had 7 years of health informatics, electronic medical records, and 10 years of health coaching with elderly people dealing with wellness issues and chronic conditions. I just cannot find anything that focuses in that target audience. I know they're out there. I also have a PR and journalism background. I've done a lot of work with nonprofits, writing PSAs and things like that. So I have a lot of skills, and I'm really not happy being without either a part-time or full-time job. And
Joanne,
so I'm just wondering if...
Yeah, I'm going to ask Noel. We have about a minute left, Noel. What practical advice do you have for someone listening who would like to have a remote job?
Fortunately, I'm able to say that there are a few resources out there. ARP has a phenomenal job search tool, resource tool, which is also a guide for reskilling and upskilling. And that is on ARP.org. There are other very specific sites as well, like retirementjobs.com, workforce50.com, seniorsforhire.org, that one could look at. I'm not sure if our caller has looked at those sites yet, but I would say starting with the arp.org/jobs would be a good place to start, particularly if you're trying to also not only look for a job, but also, you know, revamp your resume and make it really sharp while you're looking at reskilling and upskilling.
Joanne, good luck to you. And thank you so much to our guests, Noelle Bonham, State Director of AARP Maine, and Dr. Derek Tharp, Associate Professor of Finance with the University of Maine Center on Aging. Our sound engineer today was Chris Bridges. Today, Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we'll look back at the Ebola scare of 2014, how it affected Maine, and what we learned that is relevant today. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.